This is The Producers with Ryan Drain, a podcast designed for radio imaging, commercial production, all things audio. Feedback is encouraged at ryanontheradio.com.
Here it is, episode 23. Thank you, as always, for checking it out. I don't know if I've mentioned this in just a little while. The new site's been up and going for a while. I've actually had almost no complaints and no technical issues, which was really surprising because I've been a bit of a tech nerd for quite a while, and I know that new tech stuff comes with new tech problems. But if you've had any issues, or maybe it's not that something isn't working per se, but it's not the way you like it, or you can think of something better for our little community here, please fire it off to me. There's a contact page there on the website. There's also an email address. You can just use that, ryandreen@gmail.com. That's my main email. Everything goes through there. So just fire me off a little message. Of course, I'll take guest requests. If you've got somebody that I definitely have to hear from or interview, I should say, then I'd love to get the suggestion. Still have a big old list working and plenty of great people to talk to in the future. But just be aware, you can always send me your suggestions and requests, I guess, and all that stuff. I want to bring up a couple imaging sites. The current deal that I have going with John Kerber, he has a relatively brand new imaging effects service. Pretty cutting edge stuff, you know, more on the, I guess, the CHR, Alti, and Hot AC maybe type of side of things, but it's a buyout package. The deal through my site is instead of $240 for the annual fee to get it for an entire year, it's $200. So you save $40 off the annual rate, and that's for guys that need the buyout type deals. Maybe you do multiple stations, you're not attached to a big station. I guess he's been doing pretty well with that, so that's exciting. It's good stuff. Also, did want to mention my buddies over. I don't know if I've really thrown them much love, but I use them on KSCS and have been with them for quite a while. I don't really get anything for saying this, so I'm just going to throw them out there. AV Deli, really good stuff over there. If you're at a station and you're looking for a new kind of all-encompassing effects package, I know it even comes with access to some voice, and there's tons of beds, loopable and full length, multitude of different kinds of effects, and drops galore, and they're multi-format and tailor-made for multi-format. Anyway, check them out, AV Deli. Joe Kelly's just a classic. I've gotten to talk to him a bunch now, and he's just a wealth of knowledge. But he's shy. He won't come on my podcast, punk. Just kidding, Joe. Actually, I'm not if you don't come on. But then, anyway, AV Deli, good guys over there, too. All right, that's really all I have. I don't really do a lot of news and whatnot. Two-parter, Sandy Beach is the guest. Sandy Beach is the dude likes to talk. I'll be honest, it was not an issue filling time with old Sandy. In fact, I did quite a bit of editing on it, but I lifted out an entire chunk at the end where we went completely on a tangent. I did get a mite political, which I don't like to do. I guess it's kind of like religion to me. I feel the way I feel, and you'll get judged when you get judged. I'm not here to judge you. I'm not here to put that out there. I was a debater in high school and college, and I'm just kind of done with that, you know? Anyway, Sandy and I went on a bit of a tangent. I was deciding whether or not to even put that audio anywhere, but it might be fun to hear. I'm definitely not leaving it in one of the main parts, though. So that'll be in the show notes. Also, a lot of full-length audio from him in the show notes, and there's going to be plenty of audio to be heard throughout the episode as well. The one thing I wanted to make sure that I mentioned, though, and instead of getting into a ton about who he is and all that, go to their website, music4.com, M-U-S-I-C, the number 4.com. There's a lot to do there. They post so much audio to listen to, which is really cool to hear everything they're doing in high quality, by the way. Also, go through the picture section. I mention it later, I believe in part two, but they have had a slew of cool people run through that place. And just look at their studio. They've done, obviously, a lot of work and made the place look really solid. So if you are sitting there staring at a blank screen right now, one thing you could do while listening to the podcast is check out music4.com. And from that, we will move into it. We'll start with the latest package, just a sampling of the latest package of Chris Moyle's jingles. Chris Moyle's is a extremely famous morning jock in the UK. anyone from that side of the world already knows this, but from America, there might be some people that don't. He's on Radio 1 in the morning, and we went into Moyles a bunch in the interview, but he had a whole new package, and this is probably unlike a standard, you know, morning show jingle package you've ever heard. So I put together a sample of that. We kick off with that, and we go into it. Here comes Sandy Beach. Thanks for checking it out.
Good morning to Great Britain from the BBC. The Chris Moyles Show is on the air thanks to the license fee. We're right here every morning, and we do it all for you. We'll make you laugh by saying things like boobies and poo-poo. Good morning from the Chris Moyles Show from here in London town. We hope you're dressed and out of bed or in your dressing gown. Maybe you're in traffic, stuck in a massive queue, or sitting on your toilet, doing a massive poo. The Chris Moyles Show. BBC Radio.
There it is. That's brand, well, I don't know if it's brand spanking new, but it's awfully new Chris Moyles morning show jingle material. And I love that thing. It's like you walked out of a Bruce Willis movie. And which leads me to Sandy Beach, the man behind Music 4. Hi, Sandy.
I like the example of Bruce Willis, and to me, I feel like I should put on a vest and run around a building in New York saving the world. Thanks, Ryan.
Absolutely. You can then jump off said building onto the back of a Harrier jet, and that'll be absolutely real, because that's what you do when
I've kind of got that schedule for the weekend. It's a bit early for me to do that this week, but who knows? Anyway, we're talking at cross purposes. How are you doing? Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm doing super. I'm really glad we got to connect here. We've got our fancy, high-quality ISDN connection from London, England, all the way to Dallas, Texas, United States. And thank you for your assistance on the technical side there.
Not a problem.
So you are, I mean, basically, I would say Music 4 and you are one. But you have actually had a pretty long, illustrious career in the branding world, as it were. And anybody that thinks you're a jingle guy, or maybe only a jingle guy, would be sorely mistaken. That's true, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, as you know, these journeys that we all take happen for a reason, whether it's by luck or because you find something you love. But yeah, I wanted to be a DJ, and that's I wanted to be on the radio. And the very quick story, and loads of people listening to this will either know the story or have been on that journey themselves. If you're a DJ and you're amazing at it, you go on and be an amazing DJ. If you're a kind of okay DJ, you suddenly realize that life might get a bit tricky along the way, so you start developing new skills, and that was it for me. Got a real love of production. When I was DJing, when I started DJing in the UK, we didn't have production departments, but I'd been lucky enough to this is before the internet, so I was aware of production guys in the States, and that they had a guy that would make the jingles and the imaging, and I think at that time probably the commercials. Mm-hmm. I just thought this DJing thing is great, and I love it, but I wanted to do more, and also wanted to contribute to the radio stations that I was working on more. So it was a really simple journey for me. Discovered a multi-track, learned how to use it, started making things for my own shows, and then as radio got more formatted, sweepers started appearing here, and promos, and things that hadn't been on the radio in the UK before, but pretty standard in the States. Mm-hmm. And it was just that journey through, and then I got into the jingle thing, just purely being head of production at Capital, or one of the production guys at Capital, and they asked me to go to LA and work with Groove Addicts, and that was it for me. And actually, I think I'd been to Dallas before that when I worked at Radio Luxembourg. I'd had a little taste for it. And it was just a natural progression. So yes, in answer to your question, started off as a DJ, ended up being a station sound guy, went on to be a program director, then set up my own company doing imaging, then got into pretty much full-time jingle making, and now we do that, and also we have a production facility in London, so we mix TV shows, we do sound design for commercials, we do so many different things, but my day-to-day is running the company.
Yeah, I absolutely want to dive into the details of what you do at Music 4 now, but go back in time just a bit for us. There's a lot of people that are absolutely familiar with you, but you know, I'm moderately familiar with the UK radio landscape, but tell me where you were when you first started and sort of the size of that station or market, and then eventually, like you just said, you went to Capital FM, which is one of the worldwide renowned stations.
Yeah, I was really lucky. I grew up in Leeds, which is a town in the north of England. And it's in the, this would have been, I don't even know what the year is, I have to work it back. I would have been about 14, 15, and there was only a handful of radio stations, commercial radio stations in the UK. I hated BBC Radio, just had no interest because it was all talk radio. And so
Let me jump in real quick. Radio 1 now is something I listen to, and they're definitely geared towards, you know, the youths of the UK. But back then, was the BBC just absolutely doing nothing towards the younger folk?
No, that's not true. Radio 1 was pretty much what it is today, although it was much older DJs, but it was aimed at the same market. Radio 1 really hasn't changed since I was a kid in terms of what its remit was. But Radio 1 was only on AM. And I didn't realize as a kid that I was obviously an audio geek, but my dad bought a hi-fi. I switched on FM, and I couldn't believe anybody would ever want to listen to AM radio again. So I think the audio side of me fell in love with stereo and the little stereo lock light that would come on when you tuned into the station. So I think that's what got me into commercial radio over the BBC. So I never really listened to much of Radio 1 when I was a kid. Got me into my local station. So then I had a choice of BBC local radio, which was the worthy talk format stuff. Radio 2, which was far too old for me to be interested in at the time. You know, Radio Air, which was the station that I started working at, which incidentally is also the same station that Chris Moyle started working at.
Really?
Years later, because he's about 3 years younger than me. Well, he'll tell you 10, but it's 3. but really, looking back, how amazing is that? Because that would have been a TSA of over 1 million was my first station.
Yeah.
But by the time I was 18, I think I'd done 3 stations. I'd sent a tape to a radio station called Atlantic 252, which was a bit like Radio Caroline, if you're not aware of it. It's a radio station that broadcast out of Ireland on long wave, of all things. Hmm. And It was run by the guys that had been involved in some of the pirates in America. So it was pirates in Dublin. So it was heavily, although it was, you know, it was actually invested by RTE, which is the national broadcaster of Ireland, and also RTL, the big European broadcasters, had invested in this station purely to broadcast pop music into England, a la Radio Luxembourg, which was another big thing here. I don't know whether you're aware of these things, Ryan, or not, but some people will be, some people won't. But, you know, we live in a country that had dreadful radio, and the best radio came from either pirate ships in the 60s and early 70s from Radio Caroline off the shore.
Uh-huh.
Then we had Radio Luxembourg, which was a radio station broadcast from the middle of the European continent back to England. And then in the late 80s, early 90s, here was this new station from Ireland called Atlantic 252. But this 2 weeks I was working in the tape pressing plant, they'd been trying to get a hold of me. For some reason, they'd lost my home contact details. They were ringing the radio station. Luckily, a friend of mine that worked at the station was walking past reception one day, overheard a conversation and said, oh, I can get in touch with Sandy. Although I wasn't Sandy Beach at that point because my name came with this job at Atlantic 252.
Is there a abbreviated version of the Sandy Beach story?
It's really simple. When you joined Atlantic 252, they gave you a stupid name. They gave me Sandy Beach. And
did they give you Sandy Beach because your name was already Sandy, or was that both names that were fake and they handed them both to you?
No, it was completely fake. Absolutely completely fake.
Okay.
But here we are, you know, 20 years on, and I can't shake that name, because if I ring anybody up and say my real name, they would not have a clue who was on the phone. So, now,
do you have any regrets of Sandy Beach, or have you embraced it wholeheartedly and you love it?
Okay. No, I have no regrets, because my life has been absolutely, I'm so blessed with the way life's worked out for me since I got that name. It was a big changing point for me. It was a big break to get a job on that radio station. It led to so many exciting opportunities, and everything kind of came into place with that name. So, you know, I'm going to be 39 this August, and it's starting to get to the point where I'm called Sandy Beach and I'm 39, and it's a bit weird, but I don't know how I'm going to shake it. I don't know how I'm going to change it. I'd have to do some, you know, massive PR thing, and it just wouldn't be worth it. So I'll just stick with it. Anyway, do you want to talk production?
Yeah. You know, I want to, in fact, just take yourself to Capital FM real quick. What was that like for you, and how did you get that? Because is that your big kind of brick and mortar in-house radio job?
I went from Atlantic to the launch of Virgin Radio as head of production.
Okay.
And again, I was fired in the first 3 months because the management changed, and the guys that took over turned around and said, oh, we don't need anybody to make commercials. And I said, well, I'm not hired to make commercials. I'm going to make your station imaging.
Yeah.
And they went, what's that? That's how, and this was like early 90s. That's how behind the UK was at that point. And I went, no, you need a department that's going to put your promos and your imaging together. And they went, oh, no, we don't need that. Anyway, by the end of the, they basically said, look, here's 3 months' money, go away. And I said, well, I've moved back from Ireland. I want to work on this radio station. I'm going to come in every single day. And if after 3 months you don't want me, that's fine. At the end of the 3 months, they said, sorry, Sandy, you were right. We really do want you to stay. What can we do to make it right? You know, blah, blah, blah. Got a promotion, got some more money, head of production, Virgin Radio. So I consider that a big break, because that was a big deal, that station launching in the UK. It didn't turn out to be a big deal. Station took a long time to take off, but it was a big deal with Richard Branson being involved and blah, blah, blah. But that had really upset me, the way I was treated in that 3 months. I'd proved myself. But then once they said, hey, Sandy, everything's cool now, I didn't think it was cool. And I spent the rest of the time there, the next year, trying to get out of there. And I met a lovely lady called Bethan Davis, who's been in the UK radio industry for a while. She's now back in LA. I haven't been in touch with her for a while, but I met her through a job we were doing at Virgin Radio, and we got chatting, and she was working at an independent production company, a program company that made programs and inserts and bits and pieces for both Virgin Radio and Capital. She was very good friends with the boss of Capital. She said, oh, you're really good. What do you want to do? I said, I just want to work at Capital. Just want to work at Capital. That's the station I want to be part of. You know, here it is in London. At the time, it had over 3 million listeners in one market. Mm. It was untouchable. It was on everywhere. It was cool. It was sexy. It had the best DJs. It had the best production. It sounded huge. You know, I was a young kid. I was still 22, 23. I just wanted to work there. So she said, well, you know, I'll have a word. And she got a meeting together. I put a demo together. And in all honesty, Richard Park at the station, I think he thought I was a very average DJ, but a fabulous producer. He really wanted me to go there just as a producer. And I said, no, I want to be a DJ. So we compromised and I did half and half. So he gave me some off-peak shows, although off-peak in those days on that station was the equivalent of having the drive time show now.
Sure.
So I did some overnights and did the production. And then actually it turned out that he thought I was a better DJ than he originally thought. And he promoted me up to Saturday afternoons, which was a big deal because you're in this heritage lineup, real big players that never really change. So to get even a glint of any daylight as a new DJ on Capital was great. I got to do some fill-ins. Production was great. Made friends with all the DJs because I made all their shows sound great with the production. It was fantastic. And it ended too soon for me because I was only actually there 11 months beginning to end, around 94, 95. You know, I got offered the job. They just bought some radio stations, and at 23, 24 years old, I think I was 24, the boss of Capital said, look, we've just spent all these millions of pounds buying these radio stations. I'd like you to go and run one of the biggest ones, please, Sandy. And I said, I'm too young, I'm too inexperienced, I want to stay at Capital. And they basically said, well, that's your opinion. Our opinion is you can do the job, go and do the job. So I, you know, it all ended very soon for me, and it was really sad, and I'm still sad about that now.
Was that even though Sun FM, or what? Where were you going?
The station I went to work for was in Victor FM, which was a station just outside of London in the next county.
Victor.
And it's still owned by them now. But, you know, and again, it had a TSA of 1.2 million. It was a very profitable station. And here I am, this young kid walking in as the boss, where virtually everybody who worked at the radio station was older than me. And it was a real experience. And again, I loved it and it was fantastic. But I, looking back, I wish I could have done a couple of years at Capital before taking a job like that. It was a lot of responsibility very early on. But then that's where I learned how to run a business. So I can't complain.
Yeah, right. Everything leads to another. How long were you at Victor or that group?
It's in Victor, yeah. I was there for 18 months. And we had a lot of work to do in that time. We basically rebuilt all the studios. We had to reapply for our broadcasting license, which was quite a complicated process. We relaunched our breakfast show. They had all sorts of crazy broadcasting regulations. They had three breakfast shows on the air for different parts of the transmission area, but then they'd link back up for traffic and travel and news. And I was like, well, this is ridiculous. I've got three DJs playing the same records, which we can't promote during the day because we're networked during the day.
Right.
And then everyone links up for the important stuff. So we changed it all around, but we had to get permission from the broadcasting authorities to do that. So that was my first job there. So 18 months, basically, start to finish. And at the end of the 18 months there, it was kind of time to move on, I think. And you know, like any job, 18 months is at that point for a 24-year-old guy to do that job felt like an eternity. It just felt like forever. So it was time to move on.
And where'd you move on to from there?
Well, that's when I set up my own company. That was the time. That, I mean,
really? 25 years old.
Well, yeah, at Invicta, they used to call me, I had two names. It was either the fat controller or the remote controller. Because the problem is, my Capital days had, during that time at Capital, preceding that job at Invicta, I was a first call to do production work for virtually everybody in the group. And then secondly, I was getting loads of inquiries from stations in Europe, say, or other stations in the UK, saying, can you make us some sweepers? So I'd already started doing my freelance work. I guess the guys listening to this will know this story. It happens to a lot of people. The good people get spotted. They get asked to do, you know, on the side jobs. So I had all this work going. When I was running a radio station for myself, I was still back up at Capital a lot in the production room, either making production for our own station because we had rubbish production facilities at the station I was at, or I was doing stuff for other stations at the time. So once the kind of time at Invicta had come to an end, I just thought, well, I can either just move around the country and, you know, go run another radio station, or I can just, you know, go for this, go for broke and see whether I can make a living out of doing what I love doing the best. And I think towards the end of my time at Invicta, I'd said to a lot of people in the group that they should use my station as a centre of excellence for production. And everyone thought it was a great idea, but nobody wanted to spend the money on the kit to bring it up to speed. So it was that passion of wanting to make stations sound great that really made my decision that was the thing to do.
This is we're gonna hear some of your stuff now, your old reel, Capital FM and whatnot. Let me just dive into that right now and let people hear that.
This is Capital. We've got you surrounded. 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 Come out with your radio turned up. It's time for another hour of music power. Power. From the tower. As London gets hotter, so do our hits. 95.8 Capital FM. The sound of London in the sun. Continuous hits. 95.8 Capital FM. Hotter than ever. The Pepsi Network Chart Show. 95.8 Capital FM. London's number one. Certified. The non-stop love jam. On the love zone. More hits per hour. From the tower. Capital Music Power. 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 More fun in the summer sun. On number one. 95.8 Capital FM. Sun. Fun. And great music. 95.8 Capital FM. Listen. Listen. And win all weekend long. With 95.8 Capital FM.
So, people are going to recognize the voice there. Tell me about what we just heard.
Well, it's funny. I mean, listening back to that, you must remember this was 1994. So it's kind of dated in places and, you know, a lot of nostalgia involved in that. But it was so incredibly fresh. And it was even more fresh because it was in the UK. And of course, it was the voice of the legendary Brian James. And I still can't believe we talk about him in the past tense anymore.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He was just absolutely inspirational to me. I mean, the two guys I know that get mentioned a lot, but Brian as a voice, Eric Chase as a production guy for me is somebody who really inspired me, who I was introduced to via Brian. Brian, you know, I'd say to Brian on the sessions, who should I be listening to, Brian? Like, you ought to be listening to Eric Chase. Yeah, that time was really magical. And I ended up being Brian's rep in the UK as part of when I set up my company. I also acted as his agent in the UK. And I think at some point we ended up with him on about 35 stations here. And he was making really good money. And I was making great money taking my commission from him.
Absolutely.
And I would set up the sessions and stuff. So Brian and I had a really fantastic, although we only ever met once for about an hour in a whole, you know, 10 years of knowing each other, even longer. My memories of that is that we were just doing, it was just really unique in this country. And of course, it probably doesn't sound that unique to American producers. It's kind of, yeah, we were doing that stuff too. But it was quite fresh over here. And I completely admit, I was literally just listening endless to any American air check I could get and just trying to grab as many ideas as possible, which, you know, was really quite fresh for this country. So
Can we, I want to talk about Chris Moyles, if this is a good time to talk about that. You and Music 4 seem to have a very good relationship with him, and I think it's safe to say now that he would be the biggest morning personality in all of, what, all of the UK, or at least all of London, right?
Well, you know, the bottom line is we're in a very interesting stage here in the UK because he's the second biggest, it's the second most listened to breakfast show in the UK right now. Bar any format or anything, it's the second biggest. He reaches over 7 million people a week on that show.
Is it, I'm sorry, is it even, what was the other guy's name on Radio 2 who left recently?
Terry Wogan has just left and he was bigger, but I think at one point the gap was 800,000 people, which might sound huge, but when you've got Chris Moyles on just short of 8 million and Terry Wogan just over 8 million, that gap was nowhere near as big as, you know, people. It was a pretty, you know, close battle, really. I think it would have been impossible because of the demographic in this country for Chris to beat that with what he's doing on Radio 1 and with what Terry Wogan was doing on Radio 2. They're poles apart in terms of the output. But what's interesting is we've got a new host now on the Radio 2 Breakfast Show, very, very, very successful broadcaster in this country called Chris Evans. But inevitably, it's such a shock to the audience of Radio 2 that have been used to Terry Wogan on and off that station for 27 years or something like that. So it's looking like it's going to be a really, really close battle. And there is, you know, the smart money will be on by default of Radio 2 losing some audience that Chris Moyles may well this year preside over the most listened to breakfast show in Britain, which is quite a nice gig. And then in terms of Europe, I don't think there's much bigger. It's got to be one of the biggest breakfast shows in the whole of Europe.
So tell me about the way that that's set up there. You've produced, is it safe to say, hundreds of jingles for him over the years?
Yeah, the relationship with Chris Moyles is, everyone thinks, or I think a lot of people in this country think that me and him are like the best of mates and that's how the whole relationship came around. That's not true at all. Chris and I had crossed paths many, many times on radio stations where I'd left, he'd started working there, but we certainly were not friends. I was aware of him, he was aware of me, but we weren't mates, even though we'd grown up in the same city, we'd worked at the same radio stations. That wasn't the case at all. It was actually through a mutual friend that we ended up working together at Radio 1. Which was great, and that was kind of nice because there wasn't like a friendship there. It was a mutual respect for what we all did. I liked what he did on the air. He liked what I did in the production room. When he got the opportunity to start doing some work with us, he took it, and that was brilliant. I can't thank him enough because he has played a massive, massive part in the success of my career in the last 6-7 years, probably the last 10 years, and. It's a very interesting arrangement with Radio 1 in the fact that when we first started working with them, it was a booking like anything else. We'd get a booking and we would be asked to make a few jingles and that was fine. And then we did some really silly sound-alike jingles for his breakfast show. And he asked us to sound a little bit like the Jam jingles that had been on Radio 1 in years gone by. And I remember getting that call and saying, well, look, if you want it to sound like Jam, why don't you call Jam? And he went, yeah, I'm not sure they'll get the irony of the lyrics. So we did that, and then we got into a bit of trouble with John Wolford, and we agreed not to broadcast those. But what had happened during that period is the Radio 1 had no jingles. It was seen as being really uncool to have sung jingles. This trend comes round and round and round again.
I was going to say, that's a big circle, right? That's very cyclical.
And you know what? It'll come round again and it'll come round again. You know, we could talk about that more later, about what's cool, what's not, when jingles work, when jingles don't work. But ultimately, it's a circle that's just going to come round and round. But the long and short of it is, the bosses at Radio 1 suddenly heard the words Radio 1 being sung again, albeit in a silly style, and thought, well, that sounds quite good. I wonder if we could do a kind of nicer, kind of cooler version of it. And again, you know, if we have a listen to some of the launch package we did for Radio 1 as a whole station, it might be worth having a listen to a couple of these cuts in a minute.
Yeah, in fact, yeah.
And again, listening back, they sound great. They're obviously of the time. We were very much matching the sounds and voices and instrumentation of the songs that were around at the time. But it was really, really fresh for Radio 1. But interestingly enough, you know, the DJs, there was this psychological thing on the air where the DJs went, oh my God, we're playing jingles. We've gone back 20 years. It took a while for people to get used to the idea of jingles being back on Radio 1. The reality is they have not been off. They've, you know, we don't do many vocal jingles. We don't do any vocal jingles outside of Breakfast now. But the logo and the sound of Radio 1 has developed from that initial package we did. I think it was 98 that we did it.
The logo is the dun 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 dun. Is that right? Something like that?
Yep. Dun 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 bum. Radio 1 is the logo. And it's still on the news jingle. It still forms part of the Chris Moyles jingle. It's very, very well known.
What about your power intros? Do you make those, or is somebody else making those with the logo?
Yeah, I have some really, really underpaid staff that do those for me. We do those every week. We don't really call them. We have a name. We call them Wontros. Radio, because they're for Radio 1, they're called Wontros. Because we look, you know, the power intro thing, the kit of parts, the acapellas that you sample over, all good and well. But we actually get the records. We get the Radio 1 playlist as soon as the playlist meetings finish. We know what's going on that playlist. We get the tracks over here, and then as close as possible, we then custom build normally 2 or 4 a week. So at the least there's one, at the most there might be 6. We build the Radio 1 logo right onto the front of the songs in the same key, same tempo, but they're all built from scratch.
Just a quick note here, part 1 has concluded. Part 2, if you want to check that out, I hope you do. To tease, we were just talking about the amazing Radio 1 Wontros. Well, those will kick off part 2. So don't miss it. That's all coming up next with Traffic and Weather Together.